Let me show you another galaxy at this point. And this is the nearest galaxy to our own. Can we make that a little bit brighter? This is the nearest galaxy to our own. It's a galaxy called the Large Magellanic Cloud. I'll get you to zoom in a bit. And this is a galaxy I showed you before. It's one of those little fuzzy patches in the sky that you can see in summer. And you can see that it's not a pretty galaxy at all. We live in a nice spiral galaxy with these big arms. Well, this galaxy is a bit of a mess. It's called an irregular galaxy. And while in our galaxy you've got the yellow bit in the centre and the blue spiral arms and the pink bits and the black bits, it's like someone has taken those and just tipped the bucket and where everything's just landed all over the place. And so it's not a nice galaxy like ours, but you can see it's got lots of stars in the middle and it's got little pink bits all over the place. And so this is the nearest galaxy to us. Now, what a lot of astronomers, including myself, like to do is you're up observing all night because most of us work at nights. When we finish for the night, we sort of stop an hour or so before the sun comes up. We pack everything up, and we walk out the door, and we look up at the beautiful night sky. Because observatories are normally somewhere out in the middle of nowhere where you can see the stars really nicely. And it's nice to look up and see the good old Large Magellanic Cloud looking at you. And on the 23rd of February 1987, at about 4:35 in the morning, two astronomers did exactly that. One of them was living in New Zealand, and one of them was in Chile. And they both packed up for the night, and they looked up, and they looked at the good old Magellanic Cloud, and they looked at the spot right about there, and I all of a sudden saw that there was a star that wasn't there the night before. And it really stood out. And so what they saw was this. Can you zoom out? So on the left here you can see a little star in a little part of a Large Magellanic Cloud with an arrow in it. And it's a completely boring star. Its name's SK-69°433. And there wasn't much known about this star. It was just in a catalogue. And all of a sudden on the 23rd of February at 4:30 in the morning, bang. It exploded. Finally, after 400 years of waiting, we had a nice near supernova go off. Now, this supernova hasn't actually happened in our own galaxy, so we're still waiting for one in the Milky Way, but it's almost as good. It's in the next galaxy to our own, the Large Magellanic Cloud. So it's reasonably far away, but not so far away that we can still close enough to do some useful things with. This supernova is 170,000 light years away, which is reasonably far away, but much, much closer than the one that I just showed you in the Whirlpool Galaxy, which was 14 million light years away. Now, it's quite funny, actually, because if this is 170,000 light years away, that means that the light has actually taken 170,000 years to get to us. So the supernova explosion didn't actually happen in the year 1987. It actually happened 170,000 years before that. So all this time I've been complaining and we're saying, hurry up, when's the next supernova going to happen? And it happened 170,000 years ago, and the light to it's been travelling towards us all this time, and it only got to us in 1987. So, in fact, another supernova might have actually gone off, the drought might be over, and it's just that the light hasn't got to us yet because it's so far away. So this is fantastic, though. We've finally got a supernova, a nice nearby one. We can see the explosion, and then we can see it turn into a smoke ring, and we can put the whole picture together. This supernova, by the way, is called Supernova 1987A. 1987 because that was the year it was discovered, and A because it was the first one discovered that year. So that's great. We've finally got the supernova. All we have to do is make a picture of the smoke ring, and we're done. So all we have to do is just find a radio telescope and point it at it, no problems. The only catch is that this thing is very, very young, so the smoke ring, if there is going to be one, is actually going to be really, really small. And it's also a long, long way away. It's in the next galaxy, 170,000 light years away. So if you work out how small the smoke ring is going to be, it's actually going to be really, really tiny. It's actually going to be about the same size as a 5-cent piece put at the other end of a cricket pitch. Oh, sorry, wrong 5-cent piece. It's going to be, I said that one before, didn't I? It's going to be the same as a 5-cent piece 5 kilometres away. So it's going to be, I mean, you can't see a 5-cent piece from 5 kilometres away. This smoke ring is going to be absolutely tiny. You need an absolutely enormous telescope to see it. If you do your calculations and you work out how big the telescope has to be, it turns out you actually need a telescope 6 kilometres across to see this tiny, tiny smoke ring. So that's pretty big. Well, okay, do we have any 6-kilometre telescopes? Well, let's go to the biggest telescope that we have in Australia. So this is a radio telescope. Radio telescopes look a little bit different from optical, normal telescopes. So instead of being a long tube that you look through, it looks like a giant satellite dish. So hopefully some of you have actually seen this telescope before, or at least a picture of it. It's the biggest radio telescope in Australia, and it's at a town called Parkes, about 5 hours' drive from Sydney. As I said, it's the biggest one we've got, and it's 64 metres across. So that's pretty big, 64 metres, but it's nowhere near big enough. We need a 6-kilometre across telescope. It has to be 100 times bigger than this. So this is a bit of a disaster. Finally, we've been waiting 400 years. A supernova finally goes off, and we don't have a big enough telescope to see what's happening. Well, why don't we just build a bigger telescope? Well, let me show you a picture of what used to be the biggest telescope in the world. This was a telescope in a place called Greenbank in America, and it was 100 metres across. And while I said it used to be the biggest telescope in the world, well, it's not anymore, because this is what happened to it. It fell over. It was very sad. And so this is what happens when you try and build a big telescope. If you try and make them too big, it just can't support itself, and it just collapses. So this is only 100 metres, and look what happened to it. If you tried to build a 6-kilometre telescope, you might run into a few problems. So are we stuck? Is this the end? Are we not going to be able to work out what's going on? Well, the answer is no, we're not stuck. There is a way out. And the way out is to be a bit sneaky. Instead of building one big telescope, just to build lots and lots of little telescopes and join them all up with computers. So if you've got one telescope here and one here and one here and one here, you can connect them all up with cable and computers and simulate one big telescope. And that way you can get out of it. So what you do is you build lots of little telescopes, and that makes a type of telescope called an array. So this is probably the most famous one of these arrays in the world. This is at a place called it's in New Mexico in the USA. And each one of these dishes is quite small. They're only 25 metres across. There's actually 27 of them. And when you connect them all up, they make one big telescope 30 kilometres across. Absolutely huge. By the way, this telescope is called the VLA, which of course stands for the Very Large Array. Astronomers don't think very hard when they think of names. And if any of you have seen the movie Contact, anyone seen that movie? Yeah, okay, well, this was the telescope that Jodie Foster actually used in that movie. In fact, she wasn't the one using it. I was actually the one using it that week. I was actually using the telescope when Jodie Foster came along to use the telescope, and it was very irritating because I was looking at my star, and the director would say, oh, look, can we just move the telescope a bit to the side, thanks? And I was saying sort of, I don't think so. But any case, that was pretty exciting. I got to chat to Jodie Foster and explain to her everything. But she and I were using this telescope together when Contact was being filmed, 30 kilometres across. So great, why don't we use this telescope to make a picture of this smoke ring? Well, even though this telescope is more than big enough, it turns out that you can't actually do it. Because this telescope is in the northern hemisphere, and supernova 987A happened in the southern hemisphere. So you can build the biggest telescope you want in America, and it just can't see it. Supernova 987A just never gets above the horizon. So we have to head south. Luckily, there is a telescope in the southern hemisphere that can do this. It's not quite as big as the Very Large Array, but I think it's actually a better telescope. It was built about 15 years later. Even though it's not as powerful, it's much more high-tech. It's much more easy to use. So this particular telescope is called the Australia Telescope. Anyone know what country it's built in? Okay, it's in Australia. It's in a town called Narrabri, which is in northern New South Wales, about 7 or 8 hours drive from Sydney. And it's another one of these arrays. It's not quite as big. Each dish is only 22 metres across. And there's only 6 dishes, not 27. But they're all sitting on a rail track, which you can't quite see here, and you can drive them up and down the rail track like big trucks. And when you spread the 6 dishes out, you actually get one giant telescope 6 kilometres across. So this is perfect. We actually have, in Australia, a telescope which is 6 kilometres across. And as I said before, you actually need a telescope about 6 kilometres across to see this little baby smoke ring being born. So for my PhD thesis at the University of Sydney, that's what I did. I went up to this telescope, I spent many, many hours up at Narrabri, and I made pictures of this baby smoke ring being born. So the picture that Tanya's about to show you is actually the first ever pictures of a smoke ring being born. We see these little smoke rings, these supernova remnants, all over the Milky Way, but we've never actually seen a supernova go off and then the smoke ring form. So here are the pictures. It's a bit like a cartoon. We've got one per year, starting with 1992 and going through to 1998. So this is the latest image that I've got. This is sort of hot off the telescope, if you like. These are observations done in about December, and they take a few months to process the image, so I've been processing this over the last few months, and here it is. If you want to come back here next year, there'll be a picture for 1999. I'm making one of these every year, so I have to keep coming back to Australia, which is fine by me. And these pictures are in what we call false colour. The colours aren't real. I've just picked particular colours to make it easier to see what's going on. So white simply means bright, and black means faint, and all the other colours are just brightnesses in between. And you can see a number of things from this first ever picture of a baby smoke ring being born. The first thing you can see is that there aren't any pictures before 1992. And there are two reasons for that. The first reason is that the Australia Telescope was only built in 1989. Supernova 1987A went off at the beginning of 87. We didn't have any telescope to look at it before 1989, which is a bit sad. But it turns out that for various other reasons, we know there was actually nothing there anyway. We didn't miss out, because the smoke ring didn't actually turn on until 1992. And so what's going on there? Why didn't we see any smoke ring at all for 5 years? Well, the reason why is because of the way the smoke ring is formed. The smoke ring is formed when the explosion smashes into the gas around it. And for the first 5 years, there just wasn't enough stuff to make it glow. After 5 years, the explosion had smashed into enough stuff, and the whole thing started to glow. The second thing you can see is that as time goes on, the smoke ring is getting brighter and brighter. And that, well, that sort of makes sense. It's smashing into more and more stuff, and so it's glowing more and more brightly. The third thing you can see is that it's not nice and round. It's actually got two lumps on either side. You can see there's a bright lump there and a bright lump there. That's sort of not what you'd expect. You'd expect to see this nice circular ring. What we think is actually going on there is it's telling us that the stuff between the stars that this explosion is smashing into, the stuff between the stars is actually not nice and smooth. In fact, there's probably a big lump of stuff there and a big lump of stuff on that side, and that the explosion has smashed into that stuff, and that's why it's bright on two sides. And the last thing you can get from this is how fast this little baby smoke ring is actually expanding. Probably looks to you like it's not getting any bigger, but if you measure it very carefully, it is actually getting bigger as time goes on. And it's getting bigger unbelievably quickly. If you measure it and do all the sums, it turns out this thing is expanding at 3,000 kilometres a second. That's like Sydney to Perth in 1 second. So just while I've been speaking to you today, this thing has probably gotten bigger by about a million or more kilometres. It's getting bigger incredibly quickly. And that just shows you how strong the explosion is and how it's thrown things out in every direction. So that's where we're up to now in 1998. What we really like to do is get 99, 2000, just keep going for hundreds of years to see what this thing is gradually going to turn into. We want to make the connection between the explosion and these big smoke rings that we see that are thousands of years old sitting in the sky. So I guess it's going to be a long time before we can do that. I guess there'll be some other astronomer standing up here in the year 3000 telling you what's going to happen next. But we can at least start to guess. So we'll put up the next picture. So at the top here I've got supernova 1987A. This is the image. This is the same picture that you just saw. This is the last of those images, the 1998 one. And you can see a little smoke ring. And just remember how big this is. It's as big as a 5-cent piece 5 kilometres away. And this is a much older smoke ring. This is actually one that went off in the year 1006. So it's 993 years old. And it's about the size of the full moon. So this is the size of a 5-cent piece 5 kilometres away. This is the size of the full moon. It's much older and it's much, much bigger. However, you can see that there are some similarities. They're both nice and round, and they both have bright lumps on either side. This one's got a lump there and a lump there, and this one also has a lump there and a lump there. So maybe, in supernova 987A, we're seeing this will eventually turn into that. We're going to have to wait about 1,000 years to find out, but we're at least at the very beginning now, just starting to make the connection between this baby smoke ring and the much older smoke rings there. So that's the sort of stuff that I work on. I hope you agree with me that it's pretty incredible and pretty beautiful and pretty fantastic. But the question I always get asked is, well, you know, it's a nice story, but really, you know, who cares? What difference does this make? What use is this? Why is this important? And I guess that's a pretty important question to answer, because it does matter. It's very important indeed. Because what I haven't talked about is what happens next. What happens in another 10,000 or 100,000 years after this smoke ring runs out of puff? Because what's happening is this smoke ring is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And as it does that, it's smashing into more and more gas. And you can imagine all the gas piling up around it. As like a bulldozer, it smashes into all the gas around it. And eventually, after, say, 100,000 years, this thing has just run out of puff. It's just swept up so much gas, it's not funny. And when that happens, it eventually just comes to a stop, the glow fades, and the supernova remnant dies. And then what you're left with is a huge cloud of gas that this thing has bulldozed up. And then we're back to where we started before. We've got a big, dark cloud of gas. That's where those dark clouds come from. And that dark cloud's going to sit there for a long time doing nothing, and eventually it will get bumped, and some ripples will go through it, and some lumps will form, and those lumps will get bigger and bigger and bigger, and they'll collapse and form stars, and those stars will turn on, and planets will form around them, and it all starts again. So I think the most basic question you can answer is, where do we come from? And the basic answer is, we all come from exploding stars. Thanks very much, everyone.